Hello and welcome to Talk Talk again. Oliver Kim here. And in this episode, we're still talking about the area of knowledge ethics. And I'd like to talk about ethical dilemmas. What is an ethical dilemma? The word dilemma is often, I think, not used in the strictly speaking in the correct way. Many people say, well, if I have a problem, a difficult decision, well, it's a dilemma. I don't know what to do. It's a dilemma. But actually in TOK or in philosophy, the word dilemma has a very specific meaning. It means you're in a dilemma if you don't know what to do, because whatever you do, you end up breaking a moral rule. I want to give you a very simple textbook example. Is it okay to steal to save your starving family? So in other words, you have two choices: either you steal or you do not steal. So if you steal, then you're doing something which is, according to the categorical view, morally bad. Stealing is not okay. It cannot be generalized. Okay, it cannot be generalized. The moral rule that stealing is okay, therefore it's not okay, according to Kant. But if you steal, and you're doing something which is not okay, the consequence, the result is good. The family is alive. So you do something bad, which results in something good. Or the other possibility would be that you do not steal, so you're doing something which is good, but the result is bad. The family starves. It's a little bit almost like this. Is it okay? It's like the Robin Hood principle. Is it okay to take money away from the rich to give to the poor? I mean, we have a lot of political debates like this going on, of course, about tax issues and so on, taxation, because actually taxation is taking money away from those people who have it to give it to the poor. Yeah, but difficult. When is it okay? When is it not okay? Yeah. So, and that is a dilemma situation, okay? And what I want to do now is I want to give you a real life dilemma. I'm going to explain this to you, which happened at the beginning of the year 2000s in Germany. It's been quite widely studied, and also at universities, because it was quite a remarkable case. They made films on this issue and so on, because it is, yeah, a classical dilemma situation. People disagreed a lot. In public debate was very hot concerning this. Yeah, a very interesting case, okay? Well, first of all, it was actually a kidnapping case. It's a kidnapping case where I went like this. There was a law student. Kind of interesting. It was a law student. It doesn't matter what he studied, but yeah. Anyway, in this guy, he kidnapped the 10-year-old son of a rich banking family. So the family owned a bank, so they had a lot of money, and this student kidnapped the 10-year-old boy to blackmail the parents. So asked, I think, a couple of million euros, to get the boy free again. Okay, and what happened is that the parents agreed, they prepared the money, they deposited the money where at the agreed place, and the police, of course, watched the whole thing, and they caught and they saw the suspect, the kidnapper, and then they did not immediately arrest him, but it was like this, that they followed him, and because they were kind of hoping that he's going to now go back to the boy, and then they know where the boy is hidden. But he didn't do anything like that. He actually booked a holiday flight, then he bought a car, he went on a shopping with the money, okay, but he was actually completely not doing anything, no attempt made at all to free the boy. So the police then arrested the guy, the problem was that he did not want to talk, okay? So the guy was sitting there in the police office, and he said, I'm not going to say anything. The police was a little bit worried, and so were other people, because they did their math, and they calculated how many days can the boy survive without water. And so there was enormous public pressure on the police to be successful. And so the chief, the head of the police department, now decided to threaten torture on the suspect to get the information out. Now, he did not physically torture the suspect yet. And it's actually more subtle than that. But he threatened, he considered torture. And now this was not a bad police officer. He actually knew that he was breaking the law by threatening torture, because threatening of torture is psychological torture, according to German law. But he also tried to reach his boss to get the okay from the boss to do that. And not only that, he also wrote it down in his protocol that he is now going to break the law in order to save the boy's life. So you see, the whole thing is he wanted to be correct about the whole thing, right? And so this is what he then did. He threatened the use of torture. And then after 10 minutes, the suspect indeed did talk. So there was actually no physical torture done on the suspect. And it was like this, that unfortunately the boy was already dead because the kidnapper killed the boy right after he kidnapped him. Okay, so there was no even intention to release the boy because he was already dead anyway. So and now that is basically the situation. You're going to ask me, okay, what about the dilemma issue? Well, for the police officer now had two possibilities. He could now not threaten torture, which is the morally right thing to do because it is in agreement with the law, and with the consequence that the boy is dead. Or he can break the categorical law of not torture, and then the boy be alive, okay? And if you don't threaten the torture, then the boy would be dead, okay? So you see, if you do a good thing, then the boy it's bad for the boy, the outcome is bad. So that is essentially the dilemma situation. And when the police officer was later interviewed on the whole issue, he said, well, actually, I personally did not have any dilemma problem at all, okay? Because for me, it was clear the life of the boy is more important. Okay, so that is how did the whole thing go on? The story is not ended because now it's getting really interesting. The whole thing went to court. I mean, of course, the suspect, he got lifelong imprisonment and so on. That's not the issue. But the police officer got to court because he broke the German law. Why did he break the law? Because he threatened torture, and the threat of torture is psychological torture, and that's a no-go. Okay. And it was, yes, and he was convicted. He, of course, himself did not go to jail, but he was nevertheless convicted. And he basically had to, he was moved and he got a different job inside the police and so on. But it was like this, that the German court said the following, and this was quite an interesting one, which I read. It's kind of, that's almost a little bit shocking. And he says, yeah, I mean, it is like this, that sometimes we have to keep the law upright of no torture, and sometimes the costs are quite high. So that is was the argument of the law, okay? This is because they said is we cannot have a police state. Yeah? That's something that we don't want. We have to stay morally correct according to Kant. That's now my interpretation of this. I mean, Kant being German, I think, plays a especially big role over there. But essentially, that's what he says, is we have to, and sometimes the costs are high, but we have to be morally correct. The court also said is Germany has a very problematic history. We're talking about the Second World War. And so we have to make sure that police violence and things like this do not happen, okay? And it was quite interesting because this second part of the sentence says, yeah, sometimes the costs can be quite high. It was a horrible thing for the parents of the boy, of course. I read that the parents said it's almost like our boy has been killed a second time, and this time by the German court system. But they said, if we allow this, if we allow police torture, then from now on, we have to allow police torture in every case. We got to generalize this, and then let's be fair about it. Let's be open about it. Police violence, police torture is allowed now. We cannot have that. Okay. So that's the dilemma situation. Now, okay, I can at least, how shall I say, being a TUK teacher, I'm used to these types of arguments. But then a couple of years later, I got a little bit upset. Because the story is still not finished. Because what happened is that the criminal who kidnapped the boy, he now filed a complaint at the European High Court for Human Rights. Because he said, well, I've been tortured by the police, psychologically tortured, because they threatened violence on him. And he basically now tried to sue, or he did sue the German police, and at the European Human Rights High Court. And you know what they did is, yep. He was right. Yeah, his rights have been violated, the criminal's rights. And he was actually given also financial compensation. However, when I'll be very honest with you, this is where we talk about emotions now. When I read this, I felt this is not fair, man. This is really, it's really unfair. But then I said, okay, I'm a TUK teacher. I got to take a step back and let's analyze this a little bit. And ultimately, I have to admit, you got to get a little more information. First of all, it was the theoretically lowest amount of financial compensation that was possible, number one. Okay? And number two, it was like this, that actually I am happy that, or I consider it good that you try to separate these cases from each other. We have a court system, or that there are countries that have a court system that is based on reason and not based on revenge. Okay? Because in other words, when I say revenge, I mean emotions. Yeah? So that is, I think, on the whole issue here is we have, to a certain extent, two different ways of knowing somehow conflicting here. One of these is the rational thing, what is the morally right thing to do, either based on categorical or on consequentialist moral reasoning. That's the reasoning part. But then on the other hand, we also have a second form of making moral judgments, and that is based on emotions. Yeah? And what if you have a legal system or a law system, then what you want to do is you deliberately try to separate the court, or who is basically saying the verdict, from the victims. So you have an independent judge making a decision and not the victims. And that is deliberately done like that to keep emotions out of the whole thing. Yeah. Because otherwise, it's almost a question of luck. If you've, who is going to make the decision, right? And if you feel emotionally strong about the whole thing because you yourself are the victim, you're going to give the stronger punishment. Yeah, or other people are going to say, "Well, I forgive you, okay, and not punish at all." And in order to be fair.